I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello and welcome back to Pop Culture, the podcast that puts soft drinks at the top of the menu. I'm your host, Kat Brown, arts journalist and author of It's Not a Bloody Trend, Understanding Life as an ADHD Adult. And with me as always is Helen O'Hara, author, journalist and lifelong teetotaler.
Hello!
I realise I just gave you the most insane introduction, which was, today I am the podcast, Helen. I am just living and breathing, being audio. How are you doing today?
I am doing well. I've been having a very busy week. I've been working on a couple of big projects, but it's also been a really nice week. You know, obviously we had our fabulous adventure last week, but this week has included Valentine's Day. And for once, I went out for dinner on Valentine's Day. I know. So exciting. But I was out for a work meal as well. I was at a junket. You know, I've left the house multiple times. It's been pretty crazy.
Loving this for you. It's like January is well and truly buried in the ground now.
Absolutely. And good riddance. How about you, Kat? How's your week been?
It's been pretty good. I've been trying to take copies of the next book that is coming out 49 days after my first book, which is interesting and mad timing. I've been dropping copies of that round to bookshops, but I think I really need to work on my patter because today I went to a very nice independent bookshop in Wimbledon and offered up my books. And the lady looked at me and then sort of Googled nervously. And I genuinely think she thought I was some insane person who had just created a book by hand and come in and gone, hello, will you sell this single copy of a book for me? Because I keep seeing it on like Twitter all the time, like authors going and dropping off copies of their books and everything, but I'm just messing this up. So I need advice on how to do this in a non-insane way.
I have no such advice. As you know, I'm the world's worst person at marketing myself or anything I care about. So good times, good times. I was heartened by a few things this week. So like I say, I went out for dinner and I found really good soft drinks choices in both of my venues. So I went to a San Carlo restaurant called Isola on Valentine's night. And I went to just a Bill's for work lunch as well during the week. And both of them had a soft drinks menu. And then a sort of alcohol-free, you know, beers and so on menu. And then a really good lineup of mocktails and soft mixed drinks, which was exciting. Now, was there anything to challenge my love, my true love, the Boulevardier? No. But we live in hope, right?
I mean, your true Valentine of 2024. My commiserations to your fiancé, Andrea, but no.
No, yeah, it was love at first smell, actually, even before I got to the taste of that drink. But these were nice. And I just, again, I'm getting excited that I'm seeing a proper selection at chains of restaurants that are, you know, available around the country. I think San Carlo actually is only in London, but it's at like six different locations in London, which is a start. And Bill's, of course, is quite accessible to many parts of the UK. So it's you know, it's beginning to kind of spread, and it's really nice to see that happening.
Unrelated to soft drinks, but the last time I was in a Bill's, I was in Guildford. And coincidentally, the previous time that I'd been in Guildford was when I was at Sixth Form College. And on this visit to Bill's, I saw somebody like a young lady of about 16, 17, dressed exactly as I was the last time that I was in Guildford. So that made me truly appreciate both the cycle of life and that carpenter jeans are not something that I personally wish to revisit.
Oh man, I used to live in those with a little hook for your hand. I guess it's probably for a hammer, but for me, it was for my hand. Ah, fantastic.
What grabbed you off the menu?
I think it was a berry spritz or a cherry and flower spritz at Bill's, which was nice, not overly sweet, although definitely you could taste that there was sort of pink lemonade involved there somewhere. Mm-hmm. And then at Isola, I had something that was, I have to say, pretty frickin' delectable. So it was, let me see if I can get this right. It was an Italian oud. Now, I'm not sure where oud comes into this. The ingredients are everleaf forest, pineapple, passion fruit, and you got a little shot of quite a strong ginger beer on the side, which I should have tipped in, but I just necked. The pineapple, I kind of took over the drink, but in a very pleasant way. You know, it was a very nice, and there was a sort of, it was almost like a pineapple foam on top sort of fruity mix. So it was sweet. It was sweet, I'm not going to lie, but it did give that impression of being a sort of, I'm guessing, and I'm going entirely from looks and not from taste, but the look of a kind of porn star martini, I guess.
As soon as you mentioned having a shot of something to go alongside, I was like, there it is. When you say oud, do you mean like O-U-D, like the quite strong fragrance?
Yes, which is, I'm not sure where that comes into this drink, if I'm honest. Maybe they were referring to the alien race in Doctor Who. I don't know. But but certainly in terms of the fragrance, I wasn't getting much of that from it. No.
Well, you mentioned sweet lemonades, and I'm afraid I did not have a lovely drink on Valentine's Day. And I'm purely going to blame Marks and Spencer's for this and not my own poor preparation. My husband thought he was going to be away for the day itself, and obviously, you know, God forbid. So like a very sensible preparational man, he went to M&S and bought the meal deal for Valentine's Day on Monday. Really like gorgeous value, coquille Saint-Jacques, and then a really lovely mushroom stroganoff pie and salted caramel profiteroles, tick, 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 very good. And then you got a bottle of Prosecco with it, which for 25 quid all in 2024, when I've seen jars of Nescafe going for a tenner, that felt like extraordinary value. But my little bugbear, the non-alcoholic alternative was not the rather good Frizzante that we had the other week. It was a bottle of raspberry lemonade.
Oh.
I mean, I don't quite understand how that is the equal of a bottle of Prosecco, which is dry, dry, dry. Again, my husband just sort of thought that maybe they were confused and thought that the only person interested in a non-alcoholic Valentine's meal might be a literal child. I would love to frankly see a small child scraping coquille Saint-Jacques out of a seashell rather than being wildly disappointed. Yeah, that felt annoying, particularly irritating, because I looked in the fridge the next day and realised that I just had a load of really nice non-alcoholic drinks that I just completely forgotten were there.
Well, this is what we're learning from doing this podcast. We're now kind of, I am now assembling a sort of Avengers of, you know, bottles and cans where I bought a six pack and we've only drunk two of them so far. So yeah, it's quite fun. But I do get where you're coming from. Again, I am a fan of raspberry lemonade. I like it.
Yes.
I think it's nice.
Yes.
But it is very sweet and it is quite strong. As I found in that Bill's drink, and it really does kind of take over a meal. So you're right, it doesn't do the same job, and I think we're back to Melania again and the fat duck last week, but it doesn't do the same job of matching and enhancing the flavors of the food. It's doing a completely different job, which is to taste of sugar and raspberries,
which is a valuable and very important job. It's important work, but it's not important work that I want with my actually incredibly adorable mushroom stroganoff pie with a little tiny pastry heart on it that I picked up and gave to Sybil.
Ah. First of all, what are we drinking this week, Kat?
We are drinking that little known Bijou, extremely boutique carbonated drink, Coca-Cola Zero.
All right, let's crack it open.
Now, look, we don't normally match the drink to the subject of the interview because it feels a bit matchy-matchy. And frankly, if we're going to do that, then we need to get our butts in gear and actually sort out sponsorship and adverts and all that sort of stuff. But Coke Zero is the hero drink of our beloved Chris Hewitt, scion of your own Empire podcast. and one of the few things that I think I've ever seen him drink.
Yeah, well, me too, and I've known him for 20 years now. This is his absolute go-to, unfailingly so. And we just thought we'd talk about that, given that also we talked last week, obviously, about Melania and the Fat Duck's attempts to make their own Coke. It occupies such an interesting place in the firmament, and the fact is that people like Chris, as you will hear in a few minutes, will go to a gourmet restaurant and order a Coke. It gives it an interesting thing. It's a drink drunk by powerful people, apparently, you know, fueled Hillary Clinton. It fueled a lot of film people, a lot of film stars, a lot of musicians. You know, it's got that hit of caffeine to keep you going, but it's cold and refreshing, unlike coffee. And it's a bit less faff to drink than coffee, I guess, in the sense that you don't need a barista on the go. You just need a fridge. So yeah, we thought we shouldn't actually actively avoid things that people can get easily. And let's talk about Coke a little bit.
This is the first time that I've drunk Coke Zero in probably about 15, 20 years. I think when it came out, I was a devoted Diet Coke girly. And that was largely because of working in magazines and everybody else drank Diet Coke. And I was a total drinks sheep, so just went for it. And also, I don't remember enjoying the taste very much. But I don't know whether my taste buds have miraculously regrown over the last 5 years. But this is really nice.
It's not bad, is it? And it does taste more like Coke.
Yeah.
Than Diet Coke does. I will say that. Now, I gave up full fat Coke years and years ago, but Coke Zero tastes more like it without being quite as cloying, which I think is useful and important. But it's very hard to pin down the taste.
Yeah, very much so. Just briefly there, you mentioned full fat Coke. And I think actually that the discovery of that phrase, which came in when I was in sixth form in maybe like 98, 99, I think that actually is the turning point for when I was like, oh, full fat Coke. Well, I can't drink it anymore then. And sort of switched to Diet Coke. Yes, the adverts for Diet Coke were really funny, all jokey and everything, and looked quite aspirational in that way that when you are a nerdy child growing up in the middle of absolutely nowhere in England, you see supposedly glamorous American corporate women and think, oh, maybe I want to be one of them. Spoiler, absolutely no interest in being corporate anything. Thank you very much. Whereas Coke Zero just sort of feels like more of a neutral name, which is ironic seeing as it seemed to be launched specifically to appeal to men. And yet, actually, it is giving me flashbacks to that cozy, fun taste, like normal Coca-Cola tastes of fun because it tastes of childhood. And arguably for me, one of the last times that I've been able to eat or drink anything without thinking about its nutritional value and just like, oh, I'm going to have a slurp of this and then I'm going to go and jump on that climbing frame and go on that merry-go-round until I am physically sick.
Even as I say it, it's not a healthy phrase probably to use. I will say in my defense, my family has been known to talk about things like stainless steel milk.
Please expand.
Take any of these phrases and just put it in front of the drink and you kind of know what you're talking about. So, oh, can you get me the stainless steel milk, please?
Semi-skimmed, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, perfect. Adopting that.
But I took full fat Coke in the same spirit, but also like, you know, I'm not a health Nazi. I eat way too much chocolate for that. I do feel full fat Coke, full sugar Coke, and full sugar. Other drinks are available. Do really feel like you are throwing every caution to the wind and just ingesting a half a bowl's worth of sugar. And that is something that I still kind of struggle to be cool with. You know, I think all of us should, you know, try to, yes, listen to our bodies, eat things in balance, eat everything in moderation. Don't get orthorexic and be obsessed with only eating the right, the clean, the best, the optimized product. I think that's very unhealthy.
Yeah.
But at the same time, when presented with a can of, well, which doesn't really happen anymore, but when presented with a can of full sugar Coke, I do sort of see alarm bells ringing. It is very particular that way in the way that things have shifted.
Yeah, completely. It's like whenever you see people who've made big changes in their life around not necessarily diet alone, but if ever there's anything that they're feeling slightly more positive about themselves and their energy levels and everything, then ditching the sort of really sugary sodas and arguably the diet equivalents as well is fairly high up there. I had to wean myself off caffeine-free Diet Coke a couple of years ago because I was necking it like shots. It was not great. And so I did that by finding one of the like fruity sparkling waters. Mm. Years ago, I remember going to see a celebrity hypnotherapist for a feature. Ironically, she was supposed to be hypnotizing me away from my love of sweet food. Did not quite take, but never mind. But one of the things that she did along the way was she poured like a glass of regular Coke and put like a really filthy penny into it.
Ah, yes.
Oh, good grief. And then it came out like 2 minutes later and it was glistening, shining like the sun. It was a full She-Ra, all the powers transformation moment. And I mean, obviously when we're drinking Coke, we're not drinking like the unadulterated syrup, but the fact that there are still things in it that really can just strip that sort of stuff away is, yeah, it's fairly intense to see.
It's fairly intense, yeah, but it is a tasty drink at the same time, you know. And yes, I did see a similar video actually recently. I fell down an Instagram rabbit hole and there was somebody who was restoring an old stove, a small one. I don't know if it was for travel or for children, but it was a really small stove, probably the size of a microwave. And he had taken all this apart and it was absolutely rust red, fully covered in grossness. He literally took it to pieces, put it in a large plastic bin, and then poured 2 gallon bottles of cola on top of it. And then it came out and the rust just sloughed off. Not a great advertisement to put it in your body. But of course, that is like 10 liters or more of this stuff. And we don't do that, generally speaking. So.
And it is incredibly satisfying to see that sort of stuff done. And yeah, that's the thing. I fully appreciate and own that I am coming to any discussion about drinks with my own crackers baggage from my own past, present and future with food and drink. But this Coke Zero is giving me a really lovely nostalgic lift. And I, for one, am very grateful to have it in my day, Helen.
Hurrah. I'll tell you something else that I did this week is I went to see a play at the Hampstead Theatre last night. Ooh. And I decided to get a drink there while I was waiting. And they had Charity, as in cherry, and then T-E-A. So I was there to see a play called Double Feature, which was very good, by the way. And the Charity, I got the Green Charity, which was based in green tea, and it had some ginger in it. It was pretty low in sugar. And I thought, this seems ideal. It looks very, very, you know, it's in a nice glass bottle. It just looks like it's going to be not healthy, but you know, have some taste, but also not ruin my teeth or not ruin my dinner.
Yep.
And it was very, very nice. And I didn't sleep a wink last night. So oh, I was God. Interested by your mention of caffeine-free Diet Coke, which I also have flirted with over the years. And my problem really is that it's not consistently enough available when you go to places. You know, you can get it in the shop, so you can't necessarily get it in restaurants, things like that. But the caffeine, honestly, the caffeine is a factor. Like, you can't necessarily be necking, or I can't be necking hundreds of liters of this stuff on a daily basis and expect to sleep at night.
No, completely. Like, some people are pretty like tolerant to caffeine. Before I started like ADHD treatment, and by that I mean the meds particularly, I could quite happily guzzle a lot of cups of coffee a day and just not really notice the effect of it. Mm. People do actually, who can't use meds, like Ned Halliwell, who's quite a big figure in ADHD writing and research, he can't use meds, so he has coffee instead, and that works very well for him. Now, for example, if I have a drink that has loads of sugar in it, I will really notice that in a way that I don't necessarily notice it if I'm eating it or as part of a meal. And certainly some soft drinks that do have a significant amount of caffeine in can really, really creep up and do a number on you without realizing it. I've also been told by my psychiatrist a number of times, and I'm finally just about listening to him now for the last 6 months, that I shouldn't have that much caffeine at all because it could interfere with how my medication works. But for me, it took quite a long time to sort of unpick the hold and the association that coffee has now. I have sort of gone back into decaf and I don't mind that as much. Whereas before I felt very resentful about paying for something that was giving me nothing, or as I saw it. Whereas now I can just appreciate, in most cases, that reasonably good decaf.
It's always a tricky balance because I also love a coffee or two in the mornings. But, you know, past about 3 o'clock, that's not going to work for me. So hey ho. And coffee prices are going crazy nowadays. My one of my local places has put it up by 50p a drink. 50p.
Oh, God. I'm trying to remember what a reasonable price for a cup of coffee was. I mean, Pret used to do their filter coffee, which incidentally was completely revolting and tasted like bad petrol, but that used to be 99p a cup. Whenever I go into Pret now, I sort of go in, go, wow, that much, and immediately turn a circle and and leave again.
They're about to go north of £4 for a coffee in in the centre of town. There's a lot of places now hovering at £3.90, which is pretty crazy. So was there any drink-related news this week? I did see one story, which is that LA Brewery is crowdfunding. They're trying to get £1 million to spend basically on marketing and distribution and just getting their drinks out there more, because they think there is a massive demand for it that they just need to reach, physically reach. So they're crowdfunding for £500,000, ideally £1 million to do that. Pretty crazy.
And it's intense crowdfunding as well. Like, my next book, which is coming out in March, was crowdfunded because it's a very niche subject. It's about infertility, essays about loss, the idea of being like a support group in a book. And unsurprisingly, traditional publishers are not necessarily thinking that's a very cheerful or winning topic. But I had to crowdfund £20,000 to get that made. And I'm hugely appreciative of the 700, 800 strong crowd that came along with me and supported me in that way. And LA Brewery is a fantastic brand. The kombucha that it does is really, really delicious. It's a female founded brand as well, based in Suffolk. So if they can harness the goodwill of their audience in that way and give them that sense of contribution and ownership, then fingers crossed that should be a winner. But oh God, I wouldn't want to be the one trying to make that amount of money. It makes me want to go and have a lie down.
Yeah, it's nightmare. I mean, all I've had to do along those lines is sort of raise funding for a marathon or something. And that was stressful enough.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine how many bake sales they're going to have to do. That's what I'm thinking about. That's how it works, right?
So many flapjacks, Helen. So many flapjacks. Something that actually I would quite like us to go and do, potentially. Ooh. I was trying to think of the last time that you and I went, I'm not going to say clubbing, realistically, that we went dancing together. Hmm. And I think maybe it was about 2017 when we went to Hot Dub Time Machine in Brixton, which was ace.
Oh, amazing. But
we had to go out at night to do that.
Oh, nightmare.
But there is now... I'm really just noticing more of a rise in daytime clubs. So Ministry of Sound has done a couple already. They've got Fabio and Groove Rider coming on the 2nd of March, and they're doing like a club from 2 till 9 before actually launching their Big Boys late night club at about 11. And then Club de Fromage, who I have very fond memories of from Islington, they often sort of partner up with Feeling Gloomy, so you can go from Bananarama to the Smiths and back again. But they're doing a club for over 30s on the 23rd of March from 3 till 7. There was this lovely night called Before Midnight that went from 7 till sort of 11:30 midnight in Islington again, so that everybody that wanted to dance but not stay up massively late could go. And it's kind of amazing to see it just sort of inching back. Mostly so that then you can go home and watch Gladiators. Love it.
I mean, who doesn't want to do that? But yeah, that it is kind of a great idea, just because, I mean, once you're in the club, who cares what time it is outside? Like, does it really matter? There are no windows. Like, how are you going to know? It doesn't matter. So yeah, that's
just going to go and throw some really bad shapes, Helen, if I'm honest.
And are these sober clubs, or are they just, it's interesting that they're daytime because people can have a slightly different experience.
It is. I mean, it's interesting that, you know, with Club de Fromage, the daytime one, they're specifically appealing to over 30s. And I, as I was noticing that, I was like, I'm fairly sure there's some of our listeners who are under 30 who would actually quite like to go. And in that case, guys, it's fake ID time again. You thought you'd left it. You thought you'd left it, but you hadn't. Something that was genuinely alcohol free intended, but seems to have gone slightly tits up from the start is, Helen, I know that you're super fond of rugby.
Oh, hugely fond. I know. Rugby, yes.
Rugby, that's how we say it, rugby. Sports with balls, as it were. I did actually go to Twickenham in like 2012 or something for a match. And the thing that I remember most about it is that I was going on like a work trip, and there was a fantastic cheese board with lunch. That's literally what I remember from it. I can't remember who was playing. But what I do really like is they're doing a trial through the Six Nations games that they're hosting at the moment. And they're trialing an area of seating that is completely alcohol free. So you just can't drink booze whilst you're sitting in it. And the idea behind this is that they were having complaints from people who said that their view of the match was being spoilt by people constantly getting up to go to the loo, to go to the bar, and then back again. And it was just like, if you go to any kind of big event, there is just that flow of people at times who are going to do things that get in the way, and that's a bit tiresome. However, it doesn't necessarily seem to have been initially implemented very well, because there have been like some fans that have complained about the fact that they rocked up to their seats armed with their pints and didn't realise that they were in booze-free seating. Twickenham said that ticket buyers would have been clearly aware of the trial when booking their tickets and that they would have to tick a lovely big box saying that they agree to the terms. But some people told The Telegraph, surprisingly, unsurprisingly, that they didn't see that. And to be honest, when you're booking anything, if it's something you're really keen on, you're just like, yes, agree to terms and conditions. Sell my immortal soul. This is fine. Blah, blah, blah. £350. That's reasonable. Excellent. Go. Yeah, for some people, booze is quite a big part of live sports.
Yes.
But increasingly, you know, it's quite nice to see that there are options for people who are just a bit bored of having their view obscured or just, you know, having the obligatory loud lads yelling away and potentially spoiling the game.
And there might be people bringing kids who would rather sit in a booze-free section for whatever reason. You know, there's definitely, I would say, a market for it. But yes, probably make it really, really clear to rugby fans. No disrespect. I have rugby fans within my own family. But there is definitely an association there, isn't there?
Yeah. I've actually bought tickets to a rugby game this summer. My brother turns 40 in the summer and my dad was 70 in the autumn. And so I've got us tickets to what are pretty much the only rugby game that I could manage to find tickets for at the time, but a women's rugby sevens match in Paris for the Olympics.
Oh, amazing.
So we're just going to go and soak up the atmosphere and hopefully quite a lot of food. So that'll be really nice. So yeah, I'd better rehearse the rules of rugby. My God, I'm just not made for this sort of thing. I will look it up on Wikipedia and get in again there.
What could go wrong? I think it'll be great. Shall we go to our guest?
Oh, yes, please.
Okay, so today's guest is basically my colleague on the Empire podcast, our podcast host, Chris Hewitt. So Chris is obviously a journalist at Empire and one of the world's most loyal devotees of Coke Zero. Basically, after all the chat we had last week with Melania at the Fat Duck about what goes into making their own Coke substitute, we thought we'd ask Chris along to talk about why he accepts no substitute for his Coca-Cola favorite and why it is that people are so freaking obsessed with it anyway. So here are the two of us talking to Chris Hewitt. So hello and welcome to Pop Culture, Chris Hewitt.
Hey, hey, hey.
Oh, it's been so long since I saw you. It must be, gosh, hours and hours.
It's hours and hours and hours. Luckily, I've been pounding back the Coke Zero. I drink to forget. It hasn't worked. what can you do? There you are.
Chris, when was the last time that you were interviewed as celebrity podcast host and general king of the internet, Chris Hewitt?
Podcast host. I think the last time I was interviewed, Kat, was, oh my God, it was Bah Humbug, I think.
So basically the only person who ever interviews you is Helen.
The only person who shows any interest, yeah.
Well, that's nice. It's nice to highlight your special stories. It's nice that Helen shows a repeated interest.
I have his number. I'm one of a very select few people, you see, and that's what it is.
The thing is, I'm extraordinarily and widely available.
That is true, actually, yeah.
Yeah. People, I will appear on any podcast. It doesn't matter what it's about. Actually, it does. There are certain podcasts I wouldn't appear on. You know, Nazis and things.
No Nazis here.
I've done a background check on you both, and neither of you seem to have any Nazi affiliations. So we're good. We're all good.
Deeply buried. It's fine.
And repeated just erasure of all of our internet search histories, clearly.
Your internet search histories right now must be the weirdest things.
Mine currently is just going back through the entire history of flavors of Coca-Cola and variants thereon.
Well, I'm fascinated by this, Kat, because I want to know. I want to know more about the thing I've been putting into my body for the last many years. Because here's my thing about Coke, and I realize you guys want to ask me questions, but I'm just going to go for it. Here's my thing about Coca-Cola and Coke Zero. I could not, if you put a gun to my head, tell you what it tastes like. It doesn't taste like anything else I've ever tasted. I've tasted knockoff Cokes. I've tasted ersatz Cokes. I'm not even going to mention Pepsi Cola. I can do that blind taste test thing where, you know, I can absolutely identify knockoff supermarket Coca-Cola. I did this once in a hotel in Denver, Colorado, when I was visiting a set of the Avengers, and I mentioned this in the hotel restaurant to the waiter, and he did not believe me. He brought over a whole bunch of Cokes and Pepsis and Diet Pepsis and all sorts of stuff and made me test him. And I passed with flying colas. But I will say this, I honestly could not tell you what it tastes like. So what is it? What's in it? Kat, what's in it?
So it's the thing that we don't mention, which is largely just artificial flavorings and flummery, technical term. And it's just a different, the flummery level is just sort of adjusted for each of these different flavors. Because again, it's like blue raspberry is not a flavor. And yet I can identify that in 900 different types of soft drink and ice pop. Cherry, as it is in most colas, and particularly in like Diet Coke, bears almost no resemblance to the actual fruit. And yet we know it completely. The thing with Coke Zero particularly is that as soon as I tried it for the first time, having come out of a fairly hefty Pepsi Max stage and therefore being like, oh, this is the male equivalent of Pepsi Max and therefore I'll probably be quite on board with this.
But Pepsi Max was also the male equivalent of Diet Pepsi. You can tell because it has Max in it.
I find it completely insane that these borderline identical drinks, how on earth do they all taste so different? And also, how is there such a specific identity to each one?
Whenever you guys told me you were doing this, I was like, oh, I'm not going to appear in that show because you're all about cordials and flavored things, and you're going to Fat Duck and tasting specially concocted drinks. And I'm like, I know what I like and I'm addicted to it. I'm very, very open about that. And it's Coke and Coke Zero, not Diet Coke.
No. Yep,
which is the devil's piss, but Coke and Coke Zero.
I have many questions coming out of the back of this, but also, I mean, you are a bit of a gourmand. You do go to fancy restaurants. When you go to the fancy restaurants, are you the guy who has Coke?
Yes.
Okay. So you are the guy that the Fat Duck literally designed their own brand Coke for.
See, I would, if I went to the Fat Duck, if I were ever lucky enough to go to the Fat Duck, it's on the bucket list or the ducket list. I would absolutely have their flight of soft drinks, but I would keep the Coke in reserve. Because I've done that in the past. You know, I've had Karma Cola. I wasn't a big fan of it. I recognize that I have bad karma as a result. But I went to Restaurant Story in London, which is a 2 Michelin star place. It was an amazing, amazing experience. And they didn't have Coca-Cola. And they brought me Karma Cola. And it just wasn't the same. But I'm open. I'm willing. But I'm definitely that guy who goes, looks at the soft drink menu and goes, okay, do you have Coke Zero? And I will pay £6 for a little 200 milliliter bottle. I'll do that.
I can confirm he literally does do those. He does not like it when Coke Zero is not available on a menu.
Curious.
I completely get the Karma Cola thing because a lot of what we've been doing, chatting to makers and also drinkers of non-alcoholic alternatives and equivalents and that sort of thing, lots of people have come back and said it's really just frustrating when you want the thing and then you have the thing that's trying to be the thing, but like the middle of the flavor is missing or it just doesn't hit the spot in the way it should. What about Coke Zero for you is, I mean, it sounds like it is like reassuring and comforting and sort of predictable.
Yeah, I think it is. And I have so many little weird Coke/Coke Zero foibles. Not only could I not tell you what it tastes like, I honestly, I've thought about this now and again. I'm not entirely sure I like it. And yet, I drink it. And one of the things about, Helen can attest to this as well, one of the things about Coke Zero and the way I approach Coke Zero, I approach it from the north under cover of darkness, I cannot drink Coke or Coke Zero on its own. Just can't. I always have to have something to snack with it. I've tried drinking it on its own, and then after about halfway through, I'm like, I'm not sure I like this, to be honest. But there's something about the way, I don't know, this is so strange. The fizziness of Coke is so particular. And that's a big thing. The fizziness, that hit of the fizz at the back of the throat whenever you're quenching your thirst for the first time. That is a big, big thing for me. And I have never found a fizzy drink that comes close.
So
I don't know.
It's the exact level of bubbles.
The level of bubbles, the spacing of the bubbles. You know, I self-carbonated for a while when I was growing up. But, you know, I had a soda stream. Didn't come close. Not even close. It's not just a taste thing and the cloying sugariness of some of the other Coke substitutes. I don't know. It is the space of the bubbles. We need Professor Brian Cox in here to talk about the physics of this.
We did actually have a beverage technician whose job is to create versions of existing drinks, sometimes with lower sugar levels as the sugar tax requires, to literally create every single element to make this perfect. So like from the ring pull, that pause between getting the ring pull and then getting that bubble spacing, all of that stuff. We sort of look at these drinks and go, oh yeah, there it is. Fine. Chuck it in the basket. But every single element of these, particularly for the massive brands, have really, really been thought over. That's wild.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. And so I know Coke is controversial. I've read the Mark Thomas book. I've searched my soul at times, and I'm sure people would judge me. But yeah, I'm a bit of a Coke freak, which in the London media usually means something else. I mean, when I first arrived in London in 2001, and it became apparent I had a Coke problem. It was
not the usual Coke problem.
It was a different kind of Coke problem from the one that most people have. I'm a collector of Coke memorabilia, not like a wild collector, but you know, Helen was. We went to Florida.
Yeah, we did.
Me and Helen and James from the Empire podcast, we went to the Galactic Star Cruiser, RIP, and we had an afternoon off and we went to this Coca-Cola store in Florida, and I was just in hog heaven. It was amazing. And I've been to the World of Coca-Cola in Atlanta, which is the home of Coke, and that was incredible. It was like a little pilgrimage.
Talk us through your timeline. When did it become Coke Zero? Because you drank Coke. Like full sugar, is that right? Full fat Coke.
Yeah.
For a long time. Was it long always time. Full? Because you're like me, right? You'd never drank very much, I think. And so it's always been about finding something else that's fun for a night out, I guess.
Yes. Well, I don't even drink to excess soft drinks. I drink when I go out with friends and they're all drinking and they're knocking back 3, 4, 5 pints. I will quite often nurse 1, maybe 2 soft drinks at most. And I have a very, very short threshold in which I can even drink the drink. If it becomes too warm, I won't drink it. If it becomes too flat, I won't drink it. So the first 10, 15 minutes of a drink is the optimum window for me. But the timeline, I mean, I don't drink. I've never drunk. Teetotal all my life. There's a number of reasons for that. One of the main reasons is I don't like the taste of alcohol. I never have. I've tried alcohol. I've tried wines. I've tried beers. I've tried whiskey. I've tried Wicked. I've tried stuff like that. I found them all to be wanting. So I've always been a soft drink guy. But from a very early age, I'm talking like 5, 6, because my mom and dad had absolutely no control. I was drinking Coca-Cola and I just loved it. And I have a very, very strong memory as a kid of going to my godmother's in Banbridge, Northern Ireland. And she gave me a glass of Coke. And this is such a strong memory for me. It got to about that much at the bottom of the glass. So there was not that much left. And there was just something about the way I tasted it at the end and the way that the combination of the fizz and the taste, although I couldn't describe it if you put a gun to my head once again, just lured me in. I don't know. Are you sure they don't put cocaine in this stuff anymore, Kat? Because it sure feels like it.
Very
and I was
Moorish.
Hooked from that moment on.
As far as I know, there are not yet any 12-step groups for soft drinks or indeed cola.
I'm mainly injected these days. Have I mentioned that?
This is an interesting part of it then. So when did you switch from Coke to Coke Zero?
When it came out.
So what, 2005, I think it was, roughly?
Yeah. Wow. And I don't remember doing it. I don't remember there being a conscious moment when I did it. But I remember looking back at, do you remember we did the Bond-a-thon for Empire?
Yes, I do. Yes. So you watched all of the Bond films back to back over a weekend, day and night.
This was ahead of the release of Casino Royale in 2006. And myself and Nick Desemlian and Sam Toy, we decided to watch all 20 Bond films in a row for the magazine. And we had a photo shoot and we were in the Empire offices doing this for nearly 2 days, nearly 48 hours straight. And I look back at the photographs of that and there's loads of cans of Coke Zero, like 6 packs of Coke Zero just spread around. Because I was trying to get a caffeine hit as well, trying to stay awake. But also I must have switched to Coke Zero by that point. I have no recollection of it. Again, if you put a gun to my head and said, when did Coke Zero come out, Chris? I would say 2012, 2013, but no, 2005.
2005, according to Wikipedia.
So this is the thing that's keeping me alive, I think, Helen, because as you know, don't drink, don't smoke, don't do drugs, but don't exercise and don't eat well. I think those two things counteract each other. But also if I had been drinking nothing but Coke, regular Coke, full fat Coke, for the last 19 years now, I would have been dead or I would have no teeth left. And so Coke Zero, I think, is the thing that's been keeping me alive.
So why Coke Zero and not Diet Coke? Is it marketing? Because they're both aspartame.
It's the devil's piss.
I mean,
the taste is very different. It's vastly different.
Okay. Yeah? We've established that you can't describe what any of these drinks taste like, which I will completely let pass because I've been trying to do so in my head and all I can think of is like cola, and that's just not helpful in any way. So what about instead, how does it make you feel when you drink it? And how do you compare that to, e.g., full fat Coke, Diet Coke? What makes Diet Coke the devil's piss, but Coke Zero something that literally fuels you Diet through Coke. A black tie weekend of like all the Bond films?
Well, it wasn't like that initially. Coke Zero was a bit of an acquired taste. It took me a little while, and I just thought, I'm doing the right thing here. It is zero sugar. Initially, I was like, this has got zero taste. Like the sweetness of Coke was a big thing for me, but now it isn't. Whereas Diet Coke, when I have tried Diet Coke over the years, I don't know, it seems to be like an acrid quality to Diet Coke, which I just, I've never liked. I also don't like the design of the can. I don't like the colors. Mm. I don't like the colors.
Hang on, is this a Liverpool thing? You're a Liverpool supporter?
No, it's not.
It's not?
Diet Coke. No, Liverpool play in silver and grey. The away kit's quite often been silver and red. Quite often, so I'm totally okay with that. Okay. That's totally fine.
There's certainly a belief in marketing terms that Diet Coke was a woman's drink. And is there some lingering sense that it's simply just not for you? It doesn't feel like it was made for you.
Let me just lie back on the couch here and
Or is it simply the thought that perhaps drinking it is going to make you desperate to clean some windows but without a t-shirt on?
Kat, you know me, that would be a terrible prospect for everybody. Honestly, it might be the word diet. I think I might have a problem with that. Zero maybe sums up how I feel about myself, so I'm okay with that.
Okay.
Paid Dr. Freud. Oh no, it's gotten deep.
But diet, I don't know. I've always had a bit of a thing about health and being healthy and staying alive. I genuinely think that, although I haven't done it for a while, that the taste of Diet Coke was really off-putting and quite horrid and quite bitter. And was so far removed from Coca-Cola and how that tasted that I just wasn't interested. I gave Coke Zero a whirl. And then Coke Zero, eventually, I think after about 2 or 3 weeks of really just going for it, clicked with me. Probably in a way that Diet Coke would have done had I stayed the course. But because Coke Zero is even healthier than Diet Coke, I don't need to go back and try Diet Coke again. If I go to Diet Coke, I'm backsliding.
Okay, so you understand? Healthier in the sense of what? Is this because Coke has more caffeine than Coke Zero?
Diet Coke has 1% of something and Coke Zero has 0% of something.
And that's science.
And I looked this up in a book, and 1% of something is more than 0% of something.
You're blowing my mind here. Well, oh my God. I mean, just...
Do I get a treat?
I'm learning so much. You do get a treat. Here you go. I've literally got my little pot of bribing Sybil, doggy kibble here. Oh, it's all for you, Chris. It's all for you.
I still haven't met Sybil, Kat. Don't think I haven't noticed.
I would be delighted to bring her into the office wearing a giant Coca-Cola coloured bow, as I recently did for Valentine's Day. The folky myth about changing habits, in theory, it's supposed to take 21 days. In reality, it's more like 66. Was it literally just that the sugar aspect, wanting to try something different, that kept you fixed on wanting to make Coke Zero part of your routine?
I think it was. I must have liked it more than I perhaps have remembered. Otherwise, I would have just cast it aside immediately. We all remember New Coke, don't we? the horrible shudders of New Coke. I also think at the time I had just come to Empire and I'd been there about 4 years or so. And I was very aware that I do eat terribly and I have a sweet tooth. People who listen to this, they may be thinking, well, surely you're diabetic, Chris. And somehow I've managed to dance through the raindrops of that one. One day, I'm sure there's a bullet with my name on it. But I was very conscious of how much sugar I was ingesting around when I came to London 2004, 2005. Stuff like that. And there were certain people in the office who were perhaps poking fun at my diet or lack thereof. Helen, no, wasn't you. It wasn't you.
No, it
I'm thinking,
wasn't,
I'm thinking
no.
of other people.
I am in no position to throw stones on that one. We went to Bodine's together, Chris.
We did.
We went to Bodine's together.
We did. We lay down on that landmine together. And it was a tasty one too. So I think I was a little bit stung by that. And I was looking for something maybe a bit healthier. And then lo and behold, Coke Zero came along.
Has coffee ever crossed your... I mean, obviously it's crossed your path. We're journalists. It's basically just waved in front of us along with films and wine. But did that ever become a thing for you?
I don't like coffee. I don't like tea and I don't like coffee. I'm deeply, deeply weird when it comes to stuff like that. And, you know, I'm Northern Irish. I'm a journalist. You'd think that this stuff would be ingrained, that my alcohol would be mainly blood or vice versa. It just never really came to pass. And coffee, I don't like, although I love a tiramisu. Figure that one out.
It's the cream, yeah.
It's the sugar in the cream. I love the sugar in the cream. My mum loved tea. She was one of those Northern Irish cliches where she had 15 cups of tea before she got out of bed in the morning. I just never really got on board with that. Coke was my drink of choice from a very, very early age. I dabbled with some other things. I've had a lilt. I've been known to lilt from time to time before they... It's no longer available, right? And Club Orange, when I go home to Northern Ireland, I'll have a Club Orange because that is great and isn't really widely available over here. But, you know, from a very, very early age, I can remember the fridge being stocked with Coke. And I remember also at school, secondary school, at Banbridge Academy, kind of falling in with like some of my longest lasting friendships were forged in the crucible of Coca-Cola. The kids who didn't drink kind of found each other. We were all addicted to Coca-Cola. I have to keep making that very clear. We were all addicted to Coca-Cola. And so we would all go around to each other's houses and go around with big bottles of Coca-Cola and huge bags filled with chocolate and crisps. And we would just watch films and play video games. This was like when we were 16, 17 years old, and kids our age at that point were already going out and getting drunk. I remember two of my oldest friends, Ross and Phil, discovering guys who were drinking even more Coca-Cola than me. And I was like, what? This is not possible. But they would come around to my house of an evening, and they would bring two-liter bottles of Coca-Cola each, and they would just drain them. And I was astounded by this. And they wouldn't put them in the fridge either. I'm very much a purist. Coca-Cola has to be ice cold and all that sort of stuff. I won't drink it if it's warm. And I remember one time we were walking in Banbridge. We'd just gone down to the filling station. This is such a rock and roll story. We'd gone down to the filling station to load up for the night on Coca-Cola and chocolate bars. Oh, do you remember Drifters? And crisps. Do you remember roast beef and mustard Brannigans? Oh, my God. you know, all that stuff. And we were walking up the hill to my friend Ross's house. And we passed our old English teacher, Mr. Taylor. It was his Friday night, because rock and roll. And he went, all right, lads, clearly you're having a good night. And because we had big blue bags that for most kids our age would be filled with like alcohol and all sorts of stuff. And we were like, yes, sir, we're having a big night, a real big night. And then we got back and we both had a Mars bar. You know, it's that kind of, I was never cool. I was never rock and roll, but. Yeah.
It is a tribal allegiance to Coke. And I mean, you know, you talk about New Coke. So New Coke was this attempt to futz with the formula in 1985. In focus groups and in test groups, apparently New Coke scored off the charts. Yeah. Like it beat Coke in every single test they could come up with in these marketing groups. It was like New Coke all the way. And then they tried to launch it and replace people's Coke with this other drink. Mm-mm. And essentially, as I understand it, the entire population of the world rioted and burned the houses of the executives concerned to the ground and lynched them all or something. I'm not clear on the details, but I think it's something along those lines.
Yeah.
Murders. But it's a tribal identity thing, isn't it?
It is. It absolutely is. The Coke versus Pepsi thing is real. It absolutely is real. In the same way that Liverpool versus Man United is real. The same way that Beatles versus Rolling Stones is real. The same way that Apple versus not Apple is real. You know, it's weird. I don't know whether it was like for you guys, whether I don't know if this is like something I do or something silly guys do, but you know, you do become very tribal about stuff. It becomes ingrained in you from a very early age.
But particularly when you don't drink alcohol, which Helen and I have discussed ad nauseum almost about how this is very incorrectly, but in Britain kind of inevitably, that's seen as a signifier of being an adult. And so you go from the fabulous Coca-Cola stage when as a kid you can just fill yourself with sugar and then go around and, I mean, I never managed to cartwheel in my life, but theoretically cartwheel through your childhood, feeling fabulous and having a great time. But then if you're not moving to, I don't know, Whiskies R Us or gin with the flavour of broken glass and that sort of stuff, it's like, what do you do next? And when I gave up booze in 2019, I immediately switched allegiance to black coffee, which I was already very keen on. But I mean, I drank it when I went to dinner parties. I drank it all the way through the day. It was like the Canderel advert, but like with significantly more caffeine. And it was only when I, a few years later, managed to relinquish my grip on that and start drinking other things.
Yeah.
And not for me, chase what I was missing from the alcohol. I was trying to get rid of pain and all sorts of stuff and social anxiety. But also, like, who was I? What did I drink if I wasn't drinking this incredibly nerdy type of wine or something? It became like a little, I mean, a fairly significant identity crisis for me. Whereas now, thank God, we've just been to the Fat Duck and I can confidently say, along with Helen, I am a person that really likes drinks that have no whiskey in them and yet are sort of whiskey adjacent.
Oh, good.
That identity piece is, I think, a huge part of why we love anything.
It is. And I think, I guess probably my Coca-Cola addiction was a big part of my identity, especially when I did go to university and I struggled to fit in socially. So the third year of my university was just a complete utter write-off. I rarely left my house and didn't really socialize. And when people were saying goodbye to each other at the end of the year, I didn't go to any of those parties or any of those farewells. I just really felt like I wasn't fitting in at all. Again, Paige and Dr. Freud, I don't know what was going on there. I know when I came to London as well, when you move into the media, like we joke about it, but I was terrified. I was genuinely terrified because not drinking is a big thing for me. And it's a very serious choice that I've made. And I made it from a very, very early age. I knew when I was about 11 or 12, I was never going to drink alcohol. It's not a religious thing. I'm not religious at all. It's just something I knew I wasn't going to do. And I've tried it over the years. I have tried it because there's so much pressure. Oh, try this, try this. You don't know what it's like until you've tried it. I say, okay, I'll give it a go. I'll give it a go. And it's like, this is horrible. How the hell can you drink this shit? A friend of mine who almost trained himself to become a beer drinker and now is a bit of a beer connoisseur. He said it takes a year. It takes a year. I said, I do not have that kind of time to commit to drinking something I don't like. I'm not going to do it. It was okay, but I was a journalist, first of all, because I was living at home. I was living in Northern Ireland. I was insulated. But then suddenly you find yourself in London and you don't know anyone and you're trying to fit into an industry and at the time a magazine that has a very hard drinking culture. And I felt so apologetic about not drinking and I felt so judged for not drinking. And I think one of the best things that could have happened at the time was the editor of Empire at the time, Emma Cochrane, didn't drink also. And although she wasn't around then because I was actually covering her maternity leave, not as editor, they wouldn't be that mad. But she was there for a few weeks at least before she left, you know, to have a baby. And that kind of made me feel a little bit more at ease. But I could feel it sometimes when I went to the pub after work with some of the people who were there, all lovely, lovely people. And they were very, very welcoming and accepting. But I always felt a slight undercurrent of he's not drinking, therefore he's not one of us. It's interesting that Empire now is so different. It's so it is so changed. The drinking culture has gone. And actually, there's quite a few teetotalers / non-drinkers / not very heavy drinkers at the magazine now, which is great. Helen, maybe you and I played some small part in that. I'm not condemning it in any way, shape or form. It is what it is.
No, not at all. No.
You know, but I felt for a long time like I was really nervous about not drinking and will I be judged and castigated and thrown out, basically.
And I think it's lucky that you liked Coke, because in those days, and even now, you know, if you go to, you know, we go to a lot of film screenings, we go to junkets to do interviews with filmmakers, we go to all these film related events, and very often the only non-alcoholic choice or one of two along with sparkling water is Coke Zero, right? I mean, sometimes I know you've had your troubles, your travails when it's been Diet Coke. But generally, this is a drink you can actually get. It feels like it's enough part of film culture that it's there.
And you've seen me walk away. You've seen me actually not drink anything if there's no Coke. I'm just like, no, I'm good.
I have to say, Chris, I think it was you who was telling me the other day that there was a certain Hollywood producer.
Yeah.
Who is a Coke addict. Now, we won't name names. But
Coca-Cola, we should again make that.
With Coca-Cola, we can name that name. But what was that story you were telling me?
Well, I think we can name names because I think this is pretty fairly common knowledge.
Pretty well known? Okay.
So Jeffrey Katzenberg, the story goes that whenever he was coming up at Paramount in the 1980s, that he, when he was a fast rising executive on the scene, that he had a model in place where his assistants, he would put his hand out, palm open, and if a freshly cold can of Diet Coke wasn't slapped into that pan within 15 seconds, there would be hell to pay. Now, again, not very rock and roll because it's Diet Coke, but that is the most badass story I've ever heard. And it is something I aspire to. And I often, when we're recording the podcast, Kat, I will often put my hand out with my palm open. And does Helen slap a can of Coke Zero into it?
I do not, no.
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 Well, I was just thinking, Helen, He's going to be a freaking nightmare on this podcast tour.
Oh, he's sent an extensive rider already. It's just one line over and over and over again. It just says, put Coke Zero in the fridge, put Coke Zero in the fridge. Just over and over. It's like The Shining.
Well, actually, that brings me in mind of another story I've heard, and I'm not going to share the name of this person, but there was a famous American actor who years ago came to the UK to shoot a film. And there was a young and callow assistant who was working on that film who was assigned to that actor. And the actor... brought him over and said, hey, by the way, I'd like, I think it was £1,000 worth of popcorn in my trailer. Please waiting for me whenever I get back from the day's filming. And this guy absolutely panicked. It's like, you know, and he gave him £1,000. How do I do this? How do I get £1,000 worth of popcorn? But he managed to do it. He ran around London. He called up. This is, you know, before mobile phone, before internet. He called up everywhere he could find, got loads and loads and loads and loads and loads of popcorn and put it like all over, bedecked liberally this guy's trailer. And this actor comes off a long day's shooting, opens his trailer door expecting to find £1,000 worth of popcorn. That's exactly what he got, but he was angry. Why was he angry, folks? Because popcorn was his code name for cocaine. And so, he was very, very, very upset. So there you go.
There's too many euphemisms for cocaine. And in the 90s in journalism, it was fruit and flowers. It's just like, guys, we just need one list. Just one.
Yeah.
Break it down. Chris, thank you so much for coming and being on Dr. Pepper's couch today, I guess.
Dr. Really. Pepper? That guy? I hate that guy.
On that note.
This has been a lot of fun going from hero to zero with you guys. I hope that some of what I've said has been usable.
One or two bits, I'm pretty sure.
Good. Excellent. I will drink to that.
It is lovely.
Well, Liz has been sitting there for so long, it's now warm and flat. So.
Oh, disaster.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, podcast tour, empireonline.com/podtour. We're going on tour. We're in Birmingham, March 1st, Norwich, March 6th, Sheffield, March 13th, Dublin, March 21st, and Manchester/Salford, because they're going to get antsy about that, March 28th. So go now, ticketmaster.co.uk. We're going to be doing a tour. It's going to be amazing. Yay! Woohoo! Go, everybody!
I'll put it in okay. Your intro, I promise.
Once again, I have never had cocaine. Just want to say that for the record. It may feel like that sometimes, but no. Imagine if I did. Jesus.
No.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I refuse.
No, absolutely not.
I feel touched by an angel, if not an icon, Helen. The fact that we had the Chris Hewitt on our podcast.
I mean, I can't get rid of him, really. It was very kind of Chris to come along, and I am actually grateful to him. Thank you. And also, if you would like to hear more from him, of course, you can hear him every week on the Empire podcast. You can read him in the pages of Empire magazine monthly. And he and I are actually going on tour around the UK and Ireland with the Empire podcast in March. We're going to be in Birmingham, Norwich, Sheffield, Dublin and Salford. So if you'd like to go along to that, you can find all the details at empireonline.com/podtour. Plug finished, plug done.
It was beautiful. I appreciate all of the plugs. Have we got anything in the mailbag this week?
We have a bunch of messages, and mostly on Twitter, because I put a shout out. I got a few people asking me some questions, mostly about Coke, because I told them we were talking about Coke Zero. So I've got Rony Genders at RonyG87 asking, what's your favorite flavor of Coca-Cola? Is it, for me, it's Cherry Coke Zero, not full fat Cherry Coke, Cherry Coke Zero. Very, very important distinction there. I will say a Cherry Coke is quite nice, quite good. But I'm partial to a lemon myself. Very controversially, ooh. I think. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I went through a phase of trying to find as many as I could. It is the childhood taste of cherry Coke. I don't mind if it's Coke Zero, if it's regular Coke, if it's Diet Coke. If it's got cherry attached to it, I'm going to glug that. I'll be very happy. Mm. There is something undefinable about it. Just as Chris was unable to describe the flavour of Coke Zero, Coke at all, it is just something in and of itself.
Mm.
And that I find completely delightful.
I've been trying to think about what it tastes of as well. And I think when Melanie was talking about, you know, the ingredients in theirs last week, that made sense to me. It's like, oh yes, it's a boiled root, essentially, then sweetened with caramel. And that may be completely wrong, but in my head, that's now what it is. And that makes sense.
Like normally when we describe how things taste, it's because we've got the whole food equivalent that we can relate it to. I don't know about you, Helen, but I've not been to Ghana recently and therefore have been unable to dig out a kola nut to then spend the day chewing, which is remiss of me. And I would like to do that.
But yeah, you're right. I think it's hard to refer it to anything. Someone, a similar question from Bad Penguin at Jess, S-C-H-L-T-N, I don't know. What's the one Coke flavor combination you absolutely loathe? Lime, cherry, vanilla, lemon, etc. Is there one that absolutely sets you off? I'll be honest, I thought I was going to hate vanilla. I thought it was going to be too much of muchness, but I thought it was actually quite nice when I finally got my hands on some. What I was disappointed not to like was I tried that Coke Galactic thing that they did last year that had all the cool thing on the can, and I was like, Galactic, that sounds like me, I like sci-fi, I'm bound to like this flavor, and it just tasted of candy floss or something to
me. Yeah,
no
mm-hmm. That's not wanted. I really struggled with Coca-Cola Twisted Strawberry. I mean, what about that doesn't sound amazing? The answer is all of it. Completely revolting, just vile. It turns out that strawberry and Coke are just two flavours that should not go together. And that's odd, because actually, if you've got crap tasteless strawberries, shove some balsamic vinegar and sugar on them, and you've just rescued fruit. And that was sort of what I was assuming that this is going to taste like. No, just bad. No, thanks.
Just no win. Yeah, I that does kind of surprise me as well. But okay. Noted, we'll stay away from the strawberry flavour. A non-Coke related question now from Damien Fenton at dfenton21. He says, questions I've been asked when I tell people I don't drink. Is it a medical condition? Are you a recovering alcoholic? Is there alcoholism in your family? All no, by the way. Some people find a non-drinker to be a tough concept to grasp. Have you come across similar bewilderment?
Oh no, everybody's been totally fine throughout my entire life. I'm sure the same is the same for you, Helen.
So true. But really, what, you know, I'm always kind of quite happy to say, no, I just never started. No reason. It's not religious. It's not moral. It's not a judgment on you or anyone else. I just didn't start drinking. And that always seems to then throw people. And then my particular least favorite reaction is the panicked, oh, I give up drinking once, you know, for Dry January. I did Dry January 2 years ago.
I didn't have a problem. No, but I'm fine.
I'm like, I don't care. Like, with the greatest will in the world, I don't care if you did Dry January 2 years ago, because I don't judge you for drinking. I think it's fine if you drink, and I think it's fine if you don't drink. So it just always seemed like a really, it's almost like a defensiveness.
Yeah.
Just to me being in the room, not drinking, which I don't love that. I'll be honest. I really don't.
So, no, completely. It was something I really noticed in my teens and 20s, that any person who didn't drink booze was sort of like, oh, you the fun sponge sitting in the corner judging us. I think that was just partly because alcohol was just something that was loosely used to sort of tie a group together and that we'd all be on the same plane or something. But, you know, it was something so particular about booze. It wasn't something like, if you didn't take drugs or you didn't smoke dope or something, people were totally fine with that and that was okay. But if you didn't do this one thing, it was odd. It's something that I've noticed lesson as I've got older, like through my 30s. I mean, to be fair, in my 30s every other person was running marathons or doing insane,
you did one too things.
Yes, exactly. And then like now in my 40s, people are either much more chill about people doing their own thing, or they've got kids, responsibilities, or they just react badly to booze in a way that they didn't when they were younger and aren't that fussed about it so much. It is nice to be able to not have to worry so much about what people say.
Yeah.
And it does mean that when people say something like that, it's a bit more of a surprise.
Mm. And you're like, oh, I haven't had to deal with this in years. Oh, okay. We're back here, are we? Okay. What fun for you. The questions never entirely stop, Damien, but I hope that they get asked less often than perhaps they used to. We also, by the way, Kat, have influenced somebody at Kieran Lee 1970, has gone out and ordered some Non 8 and the light set of Non 15 as well, which sounds pretty amazing. Non 8 is torched apple and oolong flavour, which I insist we get on pretty much
immediately. Delicious. This is the Melbourne... I think it's Melbourne, but certainly Australian, God, so bad with geography, but the wine alternative that we had tempered with a little bit of chamomile syrup at the Fat Duck last week. Did we mention we went to the Fat Duck, Helen?
I don't know if we've mentioned it enough, Kat.
I don't think we have. I mean, did we mention that we've been there three times?
Three times!
Oh. Yeah, exactly. I mean, revolting, but still. But yes, so that is very exciting because it was completely delicious and also didn't taste like something. It just tasted like itself, which was awesome. All in favour of that.
I will be following, I think, in Kieran's footsteps and trying some more flavours myself because I do want to mix some more drinks. I think that's going to be something we're going to be trying over the next few weeks, is just making some combinations.
So whilst you're away on tour, you're going to go to some alcohol-free bars and I'm finally going to get my ass in gear and go to Club Soda's tasting bar in Covent Garden. They've had that open for a while and I'm just dying to go, and I might go and do one of their classes actually. They do some really good mixology classes. Elsewhere, Amanda, a mutual pal of ours from publishing, messaged in to flag that Folks in St Leonard's-on-Sea are having an alcohol-free drinks night on Thursday 29th of February. That is from 5pm to 9pm. And they're going to be serving drinks using Pentire, Three Spirit, and then teas and coffees as well. And that sounds absolutely gorgeous and a nice excuse for a trip to the seaside.
Hurrah! I think that's about it for this week, isn't it?
It is. I'm going to sit here and stroke this lovely cold can of Coke Zero against my face and admire the rather nice decoration on it. That's quite beautiful. If you are similarly obsessive about any kind of drink, whether it is Coke Zero or otherwise, if you've got a favourite drink that you'd like to share with us, flag up something that we're basically idiots for not covering, or any other non-booze related gossip, then please email us. We're at popculturedrinkspodcast@gmail.com. And you can also see what and where we've been drinking lately on Instagram, where we're at popculturedrinkspodcast. And you can also find Helen and I on Twitter, X, Coke Zero, Mark Twitter Flavour, or whatever you're calling it these days. Also, pop culture is on bookshop.org. You can read our books, our guests' books, and other books we like while helping to support the show if you just go to bookshop.org and search for Pop Culture Soft Drinks Podcast.
I'm away for the weekend this week, so I will be exploring drinks in another part of the country. Ooh.
I will probably just be in South London, so I will at least try to get out of Zone 3 and actually do something imaginative. But have a brilliant week, everybody. Lots of love and take care.
Keep drinking.
You've made the stick now. It's absolutely infuriating.
I can't come up with anything like sensible. Oh, well,
here we go. It's a good thing neither of us like uses words for a living or anything like that.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.